Session number 21052, Reel 3.
Charles Carrington, Reel 3.
Oh, we started doing the street clearing around the area we call Little Stalingrad, which was a bit nasty. We had tanks firing down one road, what we called the killing street. Anyone who crossed there was going to be fired at. And then some idiot ordered us to cross there. But anyway, we got across. But housebreaking is rather a nasty business, and there were one or two casualties, particularly among the tankies who had been dismounted. I was, again, being a brain gunner. The system is that one man goes forward and kicks the door open, and then the brain gunner rushes through the door, firing if necessary, and gets to the top of the house so as he can clear and cover every floor. Well, I was waiting for my mate, who was the housebreaker, and I heard a crash on the street, which is obviously a steel helmet going on the floor, and I immediately thought, God, he's had it, and I don't know what made me do it. I went outside rushing to see if I could help him. Well, fortunately, all he'd done was a burst of machine gun fire and caused him to lose his steel helmet. I picked it up as I went by. They fired at me, but fortunately missed. They hit the brick wall outside of me. And I get into the house and straight upstairs and start covering. But he was all right. He was just badly shaken because they'd been a bit close to him. I got a bit of brick dust graze on my leg where the bullets had hit the brick walls and the splinters had hit me. But it was only like scratches, it was nothing serious at all. So we eventually finished the clearing the street that we'd got to clear, and went to another street. And at the bottom of this street, there was a wire barrier across, which they'd erected, and behind it was a Spandau. And first of all, our officers told the Greek National Army to go forward and try and clear it. Well, as they went, the Spandau opened up, and of course the Greek soldiers dispersed very rapidly. So, to our amazement, our major said, right, we'll move them, and he formed us across the road, ordered us to fix bayonets and start marching down the bloody road with bayonets fixed. I don't really blame the other blokes, because if you let a line of men coming to you with 18 inches of native steel on the end of a rifle, it must be a pretty terrifying sight. But when we got down to the wire barrier, they'd cleared off and left the Spandau behind. So once again, we got away with it. But while we were across the road waiting to start moving forward, another one of my friends was hit in the knee and, of course, collapsed at side of me. And typical infantry reaction, I suppose. It was a case of thank God it wasn't me. Poor old Frank, and they took him away. I didn't see him again, so I don't know what happened to him, but obviously he must have been taken off to hospital. And eventually, as I say, we got down there, cleared the barrier out of the way, and joined up with the rest of the company, and took up billets in that area. A lot of sniping was going on, but it was... It wasn't intensive fighting. It was spasmodic, as I say, sniper mainly. Again, one or two of our lads were injured, or I think one or two were killed as well. And eventually, we more or less the whole thing collapsed. But when we were in Athens, the brigadier came to see us. And he read out a message he'd received from the ELAS. The message, as I remember it, was, we know that you have approximately 600 fighting men in Athens. You're surrounded by 30,000 armed partisans. Will you surrender? And of course the brigadier, in true British bloody fashion, said, well, of course we won't surrender, we'll attack them. So 600 attacked 30,000, and after about four or five weeks, the ELAS withdrew, piled their arms round the piles round the city, and went off into the country, and we simply collected the arms up and handed them into headquarters. What they did with them, I don't know. Destroyed them, I expect. And it was more or less all over for that time. They did start up again later on, but of course I'd left the country by then. I didn't know what was going on the second time. But it was a bit nasty while it went on. But there were quite a few of their side were killed, according to the reports. But on our side, we lost one or two very, very good men. But fortunately, it wasn't too heavy on casualties. But any casualty is a disaster when you're in a place like that.
What was your own attitude towards ELAS?
Well, we could understand why they were doing it, but of course we could understand why the Germans were doing it, but we still fought them. And quite honestly, it's simply a matter of when they shoot at you, what are you going to do? You're going to shoot back. I don't think we hated them. In fact, when the troubles were over, we very quickly established friendly relations again with the Greek population. And obviously among that population were quite a few of the ex-ELAS. I think there was a certain amount of perhaps grudging, but nevertheless respect on both sides. And when it finished, it was all over as far as we were concerned.
Why did you call this place Little Stalingrad?
Well, it was a it was a place where all of the communists, as you know, the ELAS were communists, all of the communists had congregated around there, and they'd fortified the place, and they were determined they weren't going to give it up. And I don't know who it was who originated this. Someone saw that it's like Stalingrad on a small scale, so it became known as Little Stalingrad. That was perhaps the bloodiest part of the ELAS troubles, because as I said, it's street fighting, and house clearing is a very, very nasty thing to do.
How do you clear a house?
Well, as I said, you get a house breaker who goes forward and literally kicks the door open or shoots the door open. He hurriedly dives to one side in case there's some idiot at the other end of the corridor with a machine gun. In fact, one of the dismounted tank people, he was a sergeant, but obviously he had never been taught infantry tactics, and when he kicked the door open, he didn't dive to one side, and there was a chap at the end of the corridor with a spandau, and I'm afraid the sergeant stopped it, and he was killed instantly. His mates threw grenades through and blew this chap up. But when you go in there, it's nasty, because obviously you can't see what's the other side of the door until you've opened it. Sometimes you find there's someone there, sometimes there's no one there. On one occasion, the people in the house were crying out, don't kick. So we told them to open the door, and we found just behind the door they put a packing case filled with dynamite, and hopefully as we kicked the door open we'd have set the dynamite off, which would have been rather nasty, but it didn't happen, so we didn't worry about it. But as I say, when you go in, someone, the brain gunner, has got to go up the top. So if anyone comes out of the rooms below, we can pick them off. And then when he's in possession, the rest of the lads come down and go in the house, and they branch off to every room in turn. Again, literally kicking the door open, standing on one side in case someone fires, and then going in the room and seeing if there's anyone or anything in there. Sometimes they found people in there, sometimes they found the partisans in there, sometimes it was empty rooms, but you just take the lock of the drawer.
Were you the brain gunner?
Yes, I was always the brain gunner for that platoon, or for that section, I should say.
How much firing of the brain gun did you do in Greece?
Oh, well, obviously one doesn't count the number of rounds, but on quite a few occasions I was firing magazines of bullets. I wouldn't like to say how many, probably a few thousand, most probably. I mean, for instance, on one occasion we were going forward across a green area, and the chap who was with me was the mortarman, and he spotted a strong point in the middle of this area and pointed it out to me. I put a burst at this pillbox, which is really what it was. I put a burst at it. Obviously you aim for the slots, but you don't know whether you're going to hit them or not. He put a mortar bomb over quite near to it, and immediately three men came out and put their hands up. They came forward and surrendered, but other troops in the area saw them coming forward and didn't know they'd surrendered and shot at them. So one of them was wounded. The others brought him in, and they were just passed to the rear, to the rear echelon, to be put in cages. But this is the sort of thing when we're on. Actually, that was that occasion. It's a strange thing to do, but I was behind brain gun, and I saw about four men, 100, 150 yards away, running from my right towards my left. And goodness knows what made me do it. I pointed and said, "There they go." And a sergeant standing behind me kicked me up the rear and said, "You stupid so-and-so, you're supposed to kill him, not cheer him on the way." But the first time that you see a living target and pull the trigger, it's a very, very strange happening. It's something that is against every instinct to pull the trigger on a live target. And yet you've been trained to do it. And it's just that, for that instance, instead of pulling the trigger, I just said, "Look, there they go." And I learnt my lesson, because if somebody's nodding boot up the rear, soon teaches you what you've got to do. But it's something I can't understand. I've told a lot of people of this, and I can never understand why I did it, what made me do it, but I did it.
So you were in the 11th Battalion.
Yeah.
Which platoon and company were you in?
I was in number 13 platoon, D Company. We were the 6-pounder anti-tank platoon.
Who was in charge of you in that unit?
That was the lieutenant. Was Lieutenant Michael Penn.
You said that chap deserted.
Mm.
Why was that?
Well, apparently he'd done it before. When they were in Italy, that was long before I joined the battalion, he deserted in Italy, and he'd been sentenced to 12 years. He'd served some time, and he'd been allowed out on more or less on parole, sent back to his unit. And when we were going up the Arditos, and he knew we were going into action again, his nerve just went and he cleared off. We never heard what happened to him. We knew he was captured again, but he was taken back to Italy for court-martial, and officially he would be sentenced to finish his 12 years that he was sentenced to in Italy, and then get another 5 or 6 on top. Now, what happened to him, I don't know. I never heard anything more of him. But presumably, when the war finished, people in that situation were pardoned and let out again. But he'd be in... I mean, this is... We're talking about January 1945, and as you know, the European war packed up in May, so he would certainly be in the military prison when the war ended. What happened to him, I've got no idea. I never saw him or heard what happened. But apparently his nerve just went. And you can understand a man who's been in it before, you can understand him getting a bit nervous. But as I say, at the time, it didn't make me feel very happy, for the simple reason I got to carry the spare parts wallet, the spare barrel, all the spare magazines, as well as a brain gun, which is rather a heavy load to carry. And eventually they gave me a new number 2, and we carried on. But his name was Ferrari, strangely enough, but as I say, we never heard the ending of him.
Was he an Italian?
Yeah, Italian descent. He was an East Ender, as most of the lads I served with were East Enders or even real Cockneys, and he was one of them. But obviously he was of Italian descent with that name. He was he'd got a guitar, and he used to play this guitar. He was a beautiful musician. Perhaps that might explain something, because musicians are rather, generally speaking, rather gentle people, and perhaps the violence got to him, and he just couldn't take it.
What did you think of the Bren gun?
I preferred the Lewis gun, but the trouble was the Lewis gun was too accurate. For instance, when I was on the Lewis gun in the Home Guard, we went on a range at 100 yards and firing automatic bursts, I got a 1-inch group, which was impossible on the Bren. But it meant that bullets were literally going through the same hole. Well, that's a waste of ammunition. So the Bren gun, it was a nice weapon, but it was prone to problems. One of the problems with my gun was that the return spring had become weak, and when you first started to fire, I had to cock it, fire, cock about 4 times before she'd fire on automatic. And you don't want that with a machine gun. You want it to fire on automatic immediately. And they could never cure it. Even the armoury sergeant couldn't do anything about it. It's just an inherent fault in the return spring, and you just have to put up with it.
You said you were in Athens, January 45.
Yeah.
Had you gone there to Greece in January?
Or? No, we landed in Greece in October 44, October the... 15th, 1944, we landed in Piraeus.
And you said this town or village was called, was it Amphisa?
Amphisa.
Amphiva.
Amphisa. 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 It's fairly well up the north of Greece.
Any other happenings to you in Greece?
No, not really. Once that was over, we went down to, first of all, to Levantia, and then we were there for a short time. That was during the bad weather, when there was a terrific amount of snow, and our major decided that we deserved a bit of a rest. So he ordered us on parade one Sunday morning. Everybody was most annoyed, you know, parades on Sunday, never heard of. Well, he came out and he said, right, we're going to have a battle. and he split the company into two, the two platoons to attack, two platoons to defend the canteen. And the ammunition was snowballs. So we had about half an hour to get ready, and we had a damn good snow fight between us. Everybody thoroughly enjoyed ourselves. And then when it was over, he said, right, everybody in the canteen, it's my treat. And we went in there and had a few drinks, a few jars, a few glasses of wine. And it was a very happy occasion. We thoroughly enjoyed that. And then one day we got the orders to move again. And I was, by now, I'd become a dispatch rider. And I got to do the convoy work to go down to the Peloponnese. But unfortunately, there was nearly 3 foot of snow on the roads, and riding a motorbike in that is rather difficult. So all I could do was get into the ruts made by the either the track vehicles or the armoured cars and follow them until we got down nearly to Athens, where all the snow had vanished. Nobody in Athens had ever seen snow, but 15 miles up the country there was 3 feet of it on the ground. Well, we went through there, and we were going down towards Corinth. Again, this major, who was a very human being, he stopped on the roadside and said, right, stop here for lunch. And obviously, being infantry, we stopped near a taverna, which is natural, isn't it? And he called all the DRs together, and he said, I know you've got a terribly dusty, dirty job to do, so come inside and I'll buy you drinks. So in we went. Well, I'm afraid that personally I had a drop too much. And literally I can't remember anything more until about 6 o'clock at night, when I suddenly woke up and found that we'd bivvied up for the night. I'd ridden this damn motorbike all over the mountains between Athens and Corinth and beyond Corinth. And I can't remember it. It frightened me to death when I, on the return journey, saw the type of roads we were on. But anyway, we got down to a place called Tripolis, right down in the south. And we'd only been there about 2 days, and my platoon was ordered back to Athens. And we became the demonstration platoon for the new Greek National Army to try and teach them how to do drill and use weapons of the British design. Well, when we got there, we, as I've said earlier on, we never sloped arms, we had our own drill. And we noticed that the Greeks were imitating us. Off everything that we did, they were imitating. So we decided we'd have a bit of fun with them. We went out one day and we marched at the slope. So the next day they were all at the slope, but we marched at the trail. So the next day they were half at the slope and half at the trail, but we marched at the shoulder. The next day they were absolutely flummoxed. So the final day we marched at the trail, but just before we got to them we did a reverse arms marchetese, which you finish up holding the barrel with the butt over your shoulder. It's an official drill movement of that regiment. And we finished up with the Greeks. One platoon was marching at the shoulder, one at the trail, one at the butts up, and one at the slope. We thought this was hilarious. What happened to them in the end? Goodness only knows. But we were there for about a month doing this demonstration platoon. It was quite interesting. And during that time, one of my friends, a very good friend of mine, got well in with a Greek family, and he was invited to go down. They were going to have a meal in a restaurant, and he was invited to go down to the meal and bring his friend with him. So he said to me, well, how about it? I said, yeah, okay. So strictly against rules and regulations, I took my motorbike and drove him down to this Greek house, and we had the lunch or the evening dinner, quite enjoyed it, and then we started back to barracks. And halfway up Alexandra's Avenue, heard something behind, and my mate looked around. He said, "Oh my God, it's Redcaps." Well, we shouldn't have been out on the motorbike, so we were in dead trouble. I swung round into a side road, which I knew, and at the end of this road, the Jeep was following me. But at the end of the road, there was a narrow track. It was only about 2'6" wide, which led up to the next street. So I hurriedly dived on this track, back onto the main road, opened the throttle and shot up the hill while the Jeep was still trying to turn round at the end of this road, you see. So we got back to barracks before they did. They knew where we were from, obviously, and they came up the barracks and asked the sentry if any motorbikes had come through recently, and of course Beer arrived and they said, "No, nothing's come through here. Well, we want to see the motorbikes." So he took them to where the other motorbike was, and they said, "That's the only one we've got." And they felt the block, and that's quite cold because that wasn't my bike. So we got away with that as well. But on another occasion, the same boy, or the same man, I was with him in Athens, and we missed the last, what we call, Liberty truck to get back to barracks. So we started walking back up this long Alexandra's Avenue to the barracks, and halfway up, this idiot heard a Jeep coming and he thumbed a lift. It was a blast of Redcaps again. So we were immediately on a charge, and when we got back to battalion eventually, we were marched in front of the company commander and charged with being out of barracks after curfew and all sorts of things that we'd done wrong, simply because he'd thumbed a lift off the Redcaps. But one of those things, I mean, they always say you're not a soldier till you've been on a charge. We were certainly on a charge that one. And being a Redcaps, it's a regimental entry. So when eventually I was discharged, I couldn't get exemplary character because I got this regimental entry against me. Anyway, that's a long time in the future. But it was the demonstration work was quite interesting. We were going to all this rigmarole. We used to do what they call battle drill, and you stage a mock battle, and every man on parade reels off who he is, what he is, what he carries, and what he does. So I would start and say, "I am the Bren gun, and I carry one Bren gun, six magazines, blah, blah, blah." And we were doing this for the Greeks, you see. And an interpreter was there to tell the Greeks what we were saying. Well, all of a sudden, there was a row in the ranks. And standing watching was a brigadier in the Greek army. And apparently, the lieutenant who was the interpreter had said something, and one of the ordinary soldiers decided that his grammar was incorrect, and he challenged him over it. So the brigadier immediately said, "No, the lieutenant was right." And this private soldier started telling the brigadier he didn't know what he was talking about, he couldn't speak his own language, and there's a right three-cornered argument going, and we're standing there like stuffed dummies. So our officer said to this interpreter, "Well, what's going on?" And he told us that this private soldier is telling the brigadier he doesn't know the Greek grammar, he can't speak correctly. Oh, I mean, we thought this was absolutely hilarious. But eventually we said, "Well, look, either we get on with our parade or you have your argument, you can't have both." And we managed to shut both of them, the brigadier and the private, and carry on. But It shows the Greek mannerism, you know. If you don't speak perfect grammar, they immediately challenge you over it. Doesn't matter who you are. We thought that was hilarious. Well, then eventually we finished that and we went back to a place called Silocastron, which is on the south bank of the Gulf of Corinth. And that was a lovely billet there. Beautiful sunshine, lovely beach. We were swimming before breakfast, swimming all afternoon, swimming all day nearly. And we had to test the life-saving equipment every day. All that consisted of a reel of what we call DR wire with a canvas belt on the end. And what happened? One man was swimming out a quarter of a mile.